Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Yada jayetama sattvam. Raja Sangam Vidachalam
Raja Sangam Vidachalam
Tadat Dukena Yujeta
Tadat Dukena Yujeta
Karmanaya Sasasya
Karmanaya Sasasya
Yada
When
Jayet
Conquers
Tamasatvam Both ignorance and goodness. Raja, passion.
Sangam,
the cause of attachment. Vida, separatism. Chalam, and change. Tada, then. Dukena, with misery. Yujita, one becomes endowed. Karmana, with material work. Yasasa, with the desire for fame. Sriya, and with opulence. Translation. When the mode of passion, which causes attachment, separatism and activity, conquers ignorance and goodness, a man begins to work hard to acquire prestige and fortune. Thus, in the mode of passion, he experiences anxiety and struggle. So many verses. No purport. We will gradually go through them. So the mode of passion is the mode where we are trying to enjoy the material energy. We're trying to create favorable conditions for our sense gratification. It is described that there are three planetary systems, the heavenly planets, the middle planetary systems, and lower planetary systems. It is said the higher planetary systems, such the heavenly planets, are in the mode of goodness, the middle planetary systems are in the mode of passion, and the lower planetary systems in the mode of ignorance. So basically, that means that in the higher planetary systems, the living beings are inclined towards Dharma. They're inclined towards following religious principle. In the middle planetary system, they may know about Dharma, but they are not inclined towards Dharma. They're inclined towards sense enjoyment. And then Dharma comes on after as a means from no, one must restrict this sense enjoyment. But basically, the middle planetary systems where we reside are predominated by this desire for sense enjoyment. Even if we check it by following principles of the mode of goodness. That is the difficulty. Therefore, we are all struggling in our spiritual life because we are all influenced so much by the mode of passion. It is the very birth on this planet which is entirely predominated by passion that leads us to this platform. Thus, in the initial stages, when we take on spiritual life and we are still within the modes of material nature, struggle may be expected. It wouldn't be normal if things would be very, very smooth and easy, because we are not demigods. The demigods naturally are inclined to spiritual activity. The demigods naturally are inspired to worship, and then there are desires for sense gratification. But there is an inclination to express that sense gratification according to the authorized ways of the scripture. The authorized ways of the scripture are the culture of the demigods. They are by nature inclined that way. Whereas human beings by nature are not inclined that way. And then we may have some scriptural injunction trying to restrict us. So this is our fundamental position. And therefore, spiritual life is at this stage not so easy for us. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's an interesting description of the universe. Basically, it places different living beings in various positions in the universe as to how they deal with sex life. It is said those who engage in illicit sex, for them, the lower regions where they suffer. Those who are inclined, very much inclined to enjoying the senses in lusty activities, the middle planetary systems. Those who are inclined towards sexual activity but will express it through means of Dharma and have received good material facilities for it. But their focus is still sense enjoyment, they become demigods. Then above the heavenly planets, we find the Maharlokas. It said in the Maharlokas, that is the abode of the Prajapatis. The Prajapatis are engaging in sexual activity, and there certainly is sense enjoyment and attachment to the sense enjoyment, but that's not all. They really have a desire for creating good progeny. That is very much in their mind. And they are sages who are performing austerities and sense control and then try to conceive proper children. Then we go one level higher to the Jhana Loka, and then we are dealing with personalities who are austere and who are not interested in sense gratification. That is the abode that may be attained by the vanaprastas. The tapalokas, which are still higher than the jhanaloka, are the abodes for the brahmacharis. And then brahmaloka, the abode for the sannyasis. So it is interesting that one attains a different destination as to how one involves with sex life. That explanation is there in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And how we see that the mode of passion, which is ultimately leading to that activity, kame sa krude sa raja guna samudbhava, that it is lust that is born from the mode of passion. That is exactly the difficulty. Furthermore, the problem with lust is described as avritam jnanam etena duspurena nalena cha. It says avritam jnanam, it covers our knowledge. So this is the issue, that knowledge becomes covered by lust. Urdam gacchanti sattvasta, that those who are situated in sattva, they go upwards. So if one is situated in sattva gun, one goes upwards. Then madhyatistanti rajasa, those who are situated in passion, they will remain here in the middle planetary systems. And those who are engaged in jaganta guna, in abominable work, vrittista, they are adagachanti tamasa. They go down to the lower regions within the universe. So that is the situation. So we should understand these modes of material nature are not just qualities that one attains or qualities that one doesn't attain. We should understand that the lower modes of material nature will not help us. The mode of passion will bind us here, and avritam jnanam etena, we become covered in knowledge, and then we'll act in ignorance, and ignorance will lead to degradation, to going downwards within the universe. So very dangerous. So these two qualities of passion and ignorance are danger zones for devotees. We have to realize that. We must, whenever we are interacting with the mode of passion and ignorance, danger zone. We may be protected by transcendental activity, like last night, Harinam, downtown Melbourne, and as soon as we got out of the parking garage, a wall of roasted meat smell hit our face. Right. There it is, danger zone. Then, all these people trucking around, Friday night, the long weekend, ready for sexual enjoyment. That's why they're going there late at night. What other reason? Danger zone, undoubtedly. We may be there to create a transcendental island, a transcendental atmosphere where people can take shelter. That may be our business. But then again, so easily we are distracted. We go on Harinam and the eyes are window shopping. And so on. It's not all just pure devotional service which is taking place while we are engaging in transcendental activity, because the mind and senses are still conditioned by these lower modes of material nature. So we must be very careful, because the destination that we may attain is really undesirable. Really undesirable. Even to come back into this material world to again engage in devotional service, undesirable. Because the risk remains very risky. Jat Bharat, alright, you know, birth number three. In birth number one, Maharaj Bharat became distracted by the deer. In number two, being the deer, somehow or other, the deer remembered a previous life and really how much he blew it in the previous life. Therefore, in the deer life, the deer was careful and the deer became Jat Bharat. And Jat Bharat again was very, very careful. That is the example of Jat Bharat being extremely careful. Therefore, refusing to get involved in any material activity and purposely being socially inept, being unable to understand social customs like washing hands after the bathroom. Jat Bharat did it before. He couldn't get it. He couldn't figure it out. The need, how it all worked. Social life. He was socially impossible. He didn't connect. That was his strategy. Do not connect to social life, because it leads to all kinds of forms of entanglement. Just remain totally disconnected from it, systematically. That was his approach. Being aware of the danger. So we are certainly not taking it lightly, the affliction of the modes of material nature. Appreciating that there is a danger, that even when we are engaging in devotional service, that these modes of material nature that are still afflicting our consciousness may pull us back down into another birth. And all right, the benefit of our devotional service will not be lost, and that's nice. So we can continue in the next life, but the risk that we will become entrapped in the material energy is also there. So we must be very diligent and very careful. Some people go to India and they go to the Bhrigu reader. And the Bhrigu reader, if you're lucky, finds the scroll that describes your life. The amazing thing is that most people were in a royal family somewhere in Orissa or in Rajasthan, or sannyasis who just fell down, and all that for a good price, a small donation. of whatever they take, and no one was a worm or something like that, you know. We could have been a worm in the garden of the temple, and suddenly a Vaishnava spit, it landed on our head and sort of came down, and by this causeless mercy we are here now in the form of a Vaishnava, but still looking a little bit like our previous birth. It is so hard to say what we were in our last life, but certainly not all of us were exalted Vaishnavas in last life. There are so many ways that one can come to devotional service. The mercy of a Vaishnava can uplift even one from low birth to the state of a devotee. But whatever it may be, the very fact that we have taken birth means we are at risk. It means that we were influenced by the three modes of material nature. Therefore, dwelling so much on who we were in the last life is not important, because the fact of the matter is we blew it. And it's not over yet. Not only did we blow it, we are still contaminated by it as well, and by so many previous births now. Therefore, we are in a precarious condition and must proceed very, very carefully. Padam, padam, yat vipadam nateesam. Danger at every step. And then, svalpam api dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. The mahato bayat, the greatest fear for the greatest danger, that we may again fall down to the material energy. So, Vaishnavas make solid arrangements, and that is the essential reason for this chapter. We have here this huge chapter about the three modes of material nature with so many verses that describe us some of the qualities of the modes of material nature. The main reason is that we can recognize the dangers, the pitfalls, and stay clear of the lower modes of nature as much as possible, so that we will be protected. Because the mode of goodness is uplifting and protecting us. Therefore, solid protection of goodness as much as possible is recommended. Of course, on the other side of the coin, we can look at Apichit sugaracharo bhajate mama nanya bhak sadriva samantavya samyak vyavastari saha. That devotees, they may sometimes engage in abominable activities. But these are not taken so seriously. A devotee is still seen as saintly, even if he engages in abominable activities. Why is that? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains this. He says, because within his heart, a devotee is still remembering Krishna. Even if he engages in some abominable activity, he knows, I am totally, totally gone and totally fallen. I was temple president in Vrindavan, and one day, one of the pujaris, Australian pujari, came into my office, and he put his watch on the desk, he put his tape recorder on the desk, and he said, "You take this. It's not going to do me any good where I'm going." And "You're going? What?" And he walked out of the office, and just, I didn't see him again for years. Many years. Many years later in Sydney, I saw him in the subway. His teeth all disappeared, right? Living there like a bum in the underground tunnels of the subway. Obviously, having been deeply involved with with drugs. That was quite clear. But as soon as he saw me, he came, and at first I didn't recognize him because, you know, he looked different when he was a pujari and when he was there in the tunnels. But when he saw me, he was right back in Vrindavan. He was there. He was, for a moment, he was the pujari again. For a moment, and he was remembering how he was dressing. And he was saying, remember, you know, like, isn't it that time when I dressed? And everyone was like, remember that time? I didn't, but anyway. But he remembered. He remembered how he dressed and how on one occasion it was especially appreciated by all the devotees. And he was back. He was back. Completely back. And it is in the same way that at the end of life, Everything falls away. What will stand is the service we have done. Yes, the reactions to sinful activities may be a little bit burdening us. But it is easy. It is easy to leave these things if one becomes absorbed in remembering the service. Because that's the only thing that's meaningful in life. So that's on the other side of the coin. That whatever service we have done, that is so effulgent, so bright. If we would leave spiritual life, then the memories of our life would be all just black and white pictures. Just dark, gloomy, black and white pictures. And then suddenly these full color, beautiful pictures of our spiritual life. Would be there. Therefore, we cannot allow ourselves to become distracted. The problem of the mode of passion is, as I said before, avritam jnanam etena duspurena nalena cha. The mode of passion burns like a fire in our heart, and this lust is burning, and then we forget. We forget what we are really meant to do, and we forget what is really meaningful, we forget what is really beneficial, we forget the glories of spiritual life, we forget the mercy we got, we forget, we completely forget. And then we just may act in some mundane activity. And no one can think that they are above, that we should never think. Devotees are therefore always careful again and again to look for purification, to look for mercy again and again. When we offer a lamp to the deities, we try to lock the deities in our heart. We follow the shape of the deity as we are waving the lamp, and we are trying to lock the deity into our heart. As we are waving the lamp, we are seeing the form. We're seeing the form, contemplating on the form of the deity, and we pray that that form may be burnt into our consciousness. That is our desire, because that will be our saving grace. All these little activities, they will save us from getting so distracted. In a way, when we discuss the three modes of material nature, then we're discussing danger. We're discussing the material nature. You can see the pictures of Ganga Devi, and Ganga Devi coming into the material world. And Ganga Devi is depicted as a female form riding on a crocodile. It's quite interesting that Ganga is riding on a crocodile, that her vehicle is a crocodile. Because you may know something about crocs, or you may not. Some animals can be tamed. You can tame a tiger, they say. Still, you know, you are alert, right? But there is no such... And if the tiger is tamed, maybe the trainer has a relationship with the tiger where the tiger to some extent can be trusted, but not a crocodile. A crocodile can never be trusted. Never, ever. A crocodile is a treacherous being. That's a crocodile. Basically, treacherous. You feed the crocodile and he'll bite your hand off. And try and go for the arm as well. That's a crocodile. A totally treacherous being. So, it's very interesting that Ganga Devi is riding on the crocodile, because it is Ganga Devi who comes into the material world from the spiritual world and is dealing with this treacherous material energy. So it is the material energy that is represented by the crocodile. Treacherous. Can never be trusted. One can never think, now I've got it under control. I've been chanting for 99 years. That's as good as eternity, right? In this world, if you have a 99-year lease, it's as good as forever, right? Isn't it? So you think, I've got a 99-year lease on chanting now. Now I'm safe. But one should never think that one is safe. Although one can come to a point in spiritual life which is beyond fall down. That is possible. It is possible. But that point is the point of the Parishat devotee. It is explained how Maharaj Bharat was absorbed in Bhava. And it is quite shocking, because the state of Bhava, technically speaking, is placed on the level of Uttama Adhikari, one who is beyond the modes of material nature. Uttama Adhikari also can be subdivided in different levels. In the Bhakti Sandarbha, we find Jiva Goswami describing how amongst the Uttama Adhikaris there is a division, and he says Narada Muni, in his life as the son of the maidservant, was a topmost devotee. He was so exalted that even as a young boy he got the darshan of the Supreme Lord. So, well, that's not nothing. And he was totally fixed throughout his life. So he's a topmost devotee, undoubtedly. Because he was never ever giving in to sense gratification. Therefore he was beyond the modes of material nature. But it said that within his heart there was still some affliction of the modes of nature. And therefore the Lord appeared before him, and the Lord said that this life you will not see me anymore, but you just continue faithfully in your spiritual life. So then Narada did that and was faithful for an entire life. Jiva Goswami says that there are three types of such topmost devotees. One has 2 feet in the material world and his eyes always on the spiritual world. So Narada, as the son of the maidservant, was like that. Then Jiva Goswami says there is one type of devotee, they have 1 foot in the material world and 1 foot in the spiritual world. That was Sukadev Goswami. So remember Sukadev Goswami staying in the womb for 16 years, then coming out, and then the whole thing, how Sukadev, how his father wanted to give him the sacred thread, and how he just walked away. And then he walked into the forest, and his father followed him, and in the forest there were young girls bathing, and because they were in private and all alone, they had put their dress on the bank of the river, and they were not wearing clothes, and they were bathing. And Sukadev was also undressed. But the girls, when they saw Sukadev, they could see that he was totally innocent. He had no thoughts of any any lusty activity or desire, nothing. Nothing. He was totally absorbed in remembering the Supreme Lord, and therefore the girls never bothered to cover themselves, they just let him go. But when his father came, Vyasadeva, who was by the way also transcendental, but dressed as a grihastha, the girls covered themselves. Isn't it? So Bhagavatam is describing like that the stage of the second category of devotee, one with one foot in the material world, one foot in the spiritual world. So that is quite something, quite a level that Sukadeva Goswami had. We may find another example in Uddhava. Uddhava also an interesting example because it is said that on one occasion, well, first of all, Uddhava was always absorbed in thought of Krishna. In entire Dwarka, Uddhava was counted as the most intimate devotee of Krishna. All the residents in Dwarka were appreciating Uddhava. They were all thinking, Uddhava, Uddhava, such a great devotee, Uddhava. Right? And Uddhava was a very intimate devotee of Krishna. Uddhava was extremely learned. Uddhava was a disciple of Brihaspati himself, who is the spiritual master of the demigods. So what more could you expect? You know, so Uddhava was extremely learned. And Uddhava, when Krishna would appear daily and sit in the royal court, there was a whole arrangement where Krishna would be seated in the center on an elevated throne. Next to him, to the right side, there was Ugrasena, and he was sitting a little bit to the front to indicate that he was actually the king. Right? But still, Krishna was being worshipped as the most prominent. There was this whole arrangement, Vasudeva on the left and so on. And then Uddhava would come forward and Uddhava would speak to Krishna about intimate subject matters, confidential message, and he would speak in codes. And it was so complex, no one could understand. But between Krishna and Uddhava, there was this intimacy. No one could understand. So, one day, it is said, one day Uddhava saw this beautiful young girl, and suddenly Uddhava felt hit by a wave of attraction. So he was surprised. He said, like, what's happening to me? It's like, you know, I haven't had this for ages, right? How can this happen to me, that I'm attracted to a girl? He's thinking, it's not possible. I think it must be Krishna, disguised as a girl. And it was. That's Uddhava. So, it's quite a level. Just see how much Uddhava transcended lust. It wasn't entering into his heart. He didn't have lusty desires, and he was surprised. He said, what is this? Lust? Whereas we, our old friend, knock, 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 guess who's here? No, go away. No, let me in. Knock, knock. I'm not going. No, I'm not letting you in. No. Bolt the door. Put the wooden beam in front, and then next moment, knock knock on the window. No, go away, I don't want to see you. No, no, no. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, leave me alone. Ding dong, ding dong, it's at the back door. Who's at the back door? Lust again. And as soon as you just open your window a little bit for fresh air, here I am, your old friend. Leave me alone. I don't want you. Come on. Don't be so rough with me. Yeah. We've had many a good times together. Okay, well, yeah. We did, remember? Here. a memory. It wasn't
bad.
And then Allah said, see, see. And before we know it, again and again, we are battling and battling and battling. And sometimes we feel very weak, very weak, very weak. I'm going to give in. I'm going to give up. I'm going to really give up now. What to do? Giriraj Maharaj describes that when he was involved in Bombay, there was a huge legal fight over the property. There was a businessman who had sold the property to ISKCON, but there were some tricky conditions in the contract. And if these conditions were not met, then after a number of months, the contract would become null and void. So he tried to, that man tried to manipulate things with court maneuvers, and in this way block ISKCON from fulfilling these conditions. But Giriraj Das Brahmachari at the time was the son of a lawyer, of a big lawyer in America. So he had it in the genes. So Prabhupada engaged him like that, and he was actually doing a very good job fighting in the court, to a point where Mr. Nair, the one who was fighting, was like getting quite disturbed about this Giriraj. This, he has to go. So he thought about it deeply, and he used an old trick. So one day, in Bombay there is a lot of social life, and one day, one evening when Giriraj had gone to some social function, as he was entering the car and sat down in the car, suddenly this beautiful young girl came in the car next to him and just came close, and very close, squeezed her body against his, and his mind started to spin. And suddenly lust attacked, and he thought, I'm finished, I'm gonna fall down. This is it. End of the road. This is it. I'm going over the edge now. Off the deep end. He was thinking in this way. But then he was thinking, but what will Prabhupada say when he will hear the news? He will be so disappointed. No. No. I cannot do it. I cannot do it. No. So he was saved by his love for Prabhupada, his respect for Prabhupada, and the mercy that he got from Srila Prabhupada. So if anybody thinks that they can be successful in spiritual life without a spiritual master, no chance. No chance. Lust will get you. For sure. Sooner or later. Maya will strike. If anybody thinks that they can just have a relationship with their spiritual master, which is just pro forma, well, you gotta have one. I'll take one, preferably one that that never comes. Let me see. If I live in Australia and take a spiritual master who lives in South America, that may be very convenient, because then I'll never get to see him. In that way, I'll never get any instructions. And I worship him in his picture incarnation. And I like that better than his personal presence, because the picture always smiles. Like this, we can, of course, have a very superficial relationship, but that won't save us. Only if we hang on to the lotus feet of our spiritual master, which means that we are always eager to serve our spiritual master, which means that throughout our spiritual life, every day we are making a heartfelt endeavor to please Him. Then when we will be attacked by the crocodile of Maya, the treacherous crocodile, then we just hold on to the lotus feet of our spiritual master. Then that bond that has developed in our heart will be strong enough to save us. That will save us. That will pull us out. That will pull us out of the material world. So the relationship with the spiritual master is never a casual one. Never. Nothing in relation to the spiritual master is casual or cheap. Nothing is ordinary. Everything is special. Even a little thing is special. Sometimes you think, such a circus, 20 people running around to fill one man's plate, the whole day, right? 20 people running around all over, this total in anxiety in the kitchen, making so many arrangements, like piling it up, running it in, and just cooking and here and there and cutting and buying the best that they can get, and ultimately all that has to go on the plate of one man. Poor man, right? Does he have to really eat all of that? He will die. Well, he will have to control his senses, that's for sure. He will have to be very careful and nibble a little bit so that everyone gets some mercy. But it is a fact, those who were running around and those who tried, they got some mercy. They got some mercy. Because they went out of their way to please their spiritual master. Of course, it's not the only way to please the spiritual master is by putting endless things on his plate. There are other ways as well. He might even be more pleased if we go out preaching. He might. He just might. Because, after all, there are so many conditioned souls who are totally in the grip of Maya. So we must be active in the service of Krishna. We must be active in the service of our spiritual master. Never take it casual. And then when we invest in that relationship, then even in our weak moments, it will save us. It will save us. Still, we may be weak. Still, even in spite of the greatest blessings, we may have moments of weakness. It can happen. But still, when the relationship is strongly established through service, then we can never forget. Jayananda was totally dedicated to Srila Prabhupada. And even from the very beginning, he was so impressed by Prabhupada. It said, and then Prabhupada traveled. That was after the first meeting, and then came back. And Jayananda immediately embraced Prabhupada. He embraced him. And Prabhupada said, no, not like that. He says, the relationship with the spiritual master is very intimate, but it is one of service. It is one of service. So one must always serve. One must always somehow or other serve. Said, no, not the embrace. No. Of course, when Prabhupada embraced his disciples, that was another thing. He did also. He did. But that was an interesting little story, how Jayananda, how Prabhupada pointed it out to him. No, through service you serve. That is the intimate relationship, through service. One must always try to render some service. Always. And that service is our saving grace and nothing else. It will not come from knowledge. Because it is said, Balavan Indriyan Gramo Vidvamsama Pikayasati, the senses are so strong, even a man of learning will fight, will struggle. You may know everything. After so many years, we know everything. Don't tell me anything, I know everything. Type of thing. We know so many things. It is true, we know what to do, what not to do. And in India also, people know what to do, what not to do. They know. They know. Sometimes they ask, but they know. They know very well. They know. Yes. But Vidvamsamapikarsati, the man of knowledge, is also struggling. Knowledge will help us. Philosophy will help us. At a moment of weakness, at least there is philosophy to remind us. What are the consequences of your actions? Look at the long term. Don't look at the immediate moment now. Now it looks very attractive. I know it looks irresistible, but remember in the long term. When we now go for this lusty activity, illicit sex, then we will lose our spiritual strength. And we will become depressed in our spiritual life. For one moment of fleeting sense enjoyment, you're going to risk a long time of depression. A long time of suffering. Is it worth it?
Yes.
No, fool. The mind says, yes, 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 it's worth it. Do it. Yes, yes. Live now, you know. You'll regret it forever if you don't do this. Even if you'll suffer later. But if you don't do it, you'll never forgive yourself. Do it. Do it. But this is exactly the covering. This is false. False. It's not true. It's not true. The fact of the matter is that if we ignore this lust and if we ignore this opportunity, that after a while, it just goes in the background. That which was such a burning desire that it could not be overcome. If somehow or other we take shelter of knowledge, of the mode of goodness, of sadhana, and then after some time, that lust is just diminished. And we find ourselves in a totally different consciousness. And we just think, how could I be so afflicted by this lust? It doesn't bother me at all now. It is like that. So one has to keep the long term in mind and appreciate that it is not true. The overwhelming feelings that we have in the heat of the moment, they are sort of giving us a feeling that this is gonna last forever. I'll never get over this. That's how it is. I climbed a mountain once, Himalayas, and it was very high, and I found myself the ideal seat, a little point sticking out of the rock with a little grass on top. Maybe 1 meter. So I had my Vyasa-san. So I sat down and with the wall of the mountain at my back, and I was getting ready for some deep meditation, and it was all going to be very transcendental, when it looked like smoke coming from down there. And it was rolling up the mountain. And after a while, I realized there were clouds coming from down, not from up, but from down. I've never seen clouds coming from down, but they came. And then suddenly, I was in the middle of the clouds, and it started raining. Buckets! And the temperature just dropped 20 degrees, and suddenly it was freezing. And I realized I am really high in the Himalayas, and it's really freezing. And suddenly I realized it's already quite late in the afternoon. And in my mind, I was going to be there in the night. And I thought, how cold does it get up here in the night? How cold does it get here in the night? And I was thinking about that I didn't take that many clothes. That's going to freeze to death here tonight. That's going to be something else. And then the rain turned my grass into mud. But in no time, and I was sitting there on this little point, and suddenly I realized that it wasn't as flat as I had thought it was. It was slightly sloping down, and it was pretty much a straight drop down. And suddenly, my Vyasa-san turned into a death trap. And I was already seeing the newspaper articles. Young Dutch tourist found in Himalayan foothills. I could see the article in the paper. And I was writing myself off. But then, you know, half an hour later, the clouds moved on, and the sun returned, and things started to look better. And then, you know, my clothes dried up, and then even the slippery slope, which seemed impossible to climb when I was wet, was starting to dry up, and I thought, well, you know, I might make it. And I did, and here I am. Still alive, and it wasn't as bad as it seemed in the heat of the moment. And this is the material world. The heat of the moment. The heat of the moment is so intense that we think, I cannot last, I cannot tolerate this anymore, I have to do it, I'm going to bloop, I'm going to fall down, I'm going to give up. This is it, I'm at my limits. Don't believe it. It's just another trick of the mind. It's the mind is telling us, yes, 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 we're going to enjoy. You cannot tolerate this anymore. No, 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 you're at your limit. Give up now, give up. Yes, 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 do it. You have no chance, you can't. But we can. Just take shelter of Krishna. Take shelter of the lotus feet of our spiritual master. Pray for strength. Pray for shelter. And somehow or other, we will do it. We will do it. And then, a little later, that lust is gone. It is gone. So, as long as we are afflicted by the three modes of material nature, there will be attacks of the six enemies. Kama, krodha, lobha, mada, moha, and matsarya. Lust, greed, anger, madness, illusion, and envy. There will be. There will be. We cannot be above. There will be. It will come again and again. Again and again. So, we are prepared, well prepared, with good knowledge and good advice. And in this way, we can keep in mind. Do not let the mind fool you at the time when lust attacks. Because the mind will be on lust's side. And the mind will tell us all kinds of rubbish arguments. It will just tell us rubbish. And whatever the mind says at that time, say it's rubbish. We've had many people who wanted to leave Krishna consciousness and they rationalize it. Isn't it? They come with some story, no, 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 I can't stay, I really can't do it. And you preach to them and tell, no, this is just Maya. Maya is just attacking you now. It's not true. No, 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 you don't understand. Said, we understand everything, baby. It's lust, the old, devouring, sinful enemy of this world. That's all it is. It's just, no, 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 it's not that, you know. It's just that there is really an emergency and my family really needs me and I really need to go. You don't understand, you know, and my family, you know, like in our family, we have such a deep, loving relationship that like I can't ignore that. You may have never had that and therefore you cannot understand, but we, in our family, you know, we is like, all, one for all and all for one, you know. We are together and I cannot just break that trust. You know, that trust they've invested in me. Rubbish. It's lust, baby. It's simply sex, sex, sex. You want it and you're gonna get it, isn't it? And you come with all your excuses why you have to leave Krishna consciousness. But the truth is, you're going to break regulative principle number four. Number four, number four, isn't it? That's what you're gonna do. And you're just telling me excuses. No, no, I'll be right back. No, 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 I just go for 2 days. Yes, yes, yes. Heard it all before. Heard it all before. You want to simply give in to the mind and the senses. Well, that's when we should tie you up.
put you in the basement of the temple with a chain on your leg, okay, and give you lots of Mahaprasada. What to do? Because this is the problem of the mode of passion. It covers our knowledge and makes us act like fools, as is described in the Bhagavatam. It describes about man and says dancing dogs in the hands of a woman. That means a materialistic, lusty prostitute type. Yeah, and for the ladies, same thing. Yeah. Just think, here is the prince you've always been dreaming of. This is him. Don't believe it. Where's his white horse? He doesn't have one. Yeah. He may have a white Porsche. Yeah. Don't go for it. He's not going to be the answer to your dreams. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, this is for the ladies, he said that there is no man in the world that can satisfy the desires of a woman. That's what he said. Only Krishna can. So don't believe that there is a man, that there is the man. You see, there is this myth that for everyone in this world there is the perfect match, you know. Somewhere on this planet, yes, your perfect match is out there. And it's just a matter of time until you meet, yes, by destiny. And it's just waiting. Is this my match? Cannot be. Is this my match? Cannot be. Is this my match? Cannot be. So, and then one day we think, yes, this must be the one. But, dear devotees, I'm so sorry today to come here with the heavy news. The one doesn't exist. Why do you think there are so many divorces and partner exchange and all this going on? Because the one doesn't exist. You see, the senses are so lusty, there is more than one. There is more than one out there. There are many. Yes, many. So this whole myth, the one, don't believe in it. It's not true. There is not that person in the world who is your perfect counterpart. It seems like that for 1 week, right? And then afterwards it starts, right? And then marriage, right? There is no marriage that works, right? A marriage that works, it doesn't exist. It doesn't, Bhakta. It's because you're tall, you know. High trees catch a lot of wind, you know. So, okay, take it from me. There is no marriage that works. Marriage is hard work. That's how it is. Isn't it, Bhakti? She says yes. This is how it is. It doesn't work. Not on its own. Not at all. Boy, it's hard work, right? Some are rather work it out and make it work, right? Then, yes, then maybe you'll celebrate your silver one and God knows how many celebrations there will be. Maybe then, but it's hard work. The one doesn't exist. Sorry. It's the duty of a sannyasi to destroy all illusions. So I say sorry, But the truth is, I do it with pleasure. Any questions, any comments? Go, Baksha, go.
Two questions about your past. You were talking about your relationship with Shrivanasa and how it's imperative that you have a relationship where you can actually offer service to the spiritual master. In the history of ISKCON, we understand that that has been the case for some devotees who diligently served the lotus feet of a spiritual master who they thought was pure.
Uh-huh.
And then at a certain stage, in Maharaj, you know exactly where I'm coming from. At a certain stage in your devotional life, the rug was pulled from underneath you, where you also found out that that person succumbed to those lusty desires and wasn't the pure devotee that you thought was, and all of a sudden you were left flat. How do you serve then? And the other one is sometimes a devotee takes initiation from a spiritual master, and that spiritual master passes away.
Okay, let's take one at a time. Okay, he throws a ton of bricks, huh? When a spiritual master falls down, it is a great tragedy. When the spiritual master is in the category of having 2 feet, I didn't finish the 3 actually, there's 2 feet in the material world, eyes on the spiritual world, 1 foot in the spiritual world, 1 foot in the material world, and 2 feet in the spiritual world, and eyes on the material world, that was Narada in his present form, where he's in a spiritual body. So if the spiritual master is in that stage where Narada was in his first birth as the son of the maidservant, there may be some remnants of the motes in his heart, then he has to keep his eyes always fixed on Krishna. And if he turns his eyes away, he could potentially fall down. That risk is there. So that is what happened. Because these men who were spiritual masters and fell down are actually exalted devotees. And even after they fell down, when we met them, right, then we saw these two sides in their personality, the pure devotee and the other side, the one that is still in the grip of lust. And we saw sometimes for a moment deep devotional realizations. Deep. Anyway, when they were properly situated, they were the vaya media of Krishna. And the mercy of Krishna came, the mercy of the Parampara came, they did valuable service, and whatever service the disciple offered to them went to Krishna. And the disciple got all the benefit. Then, when that spiritual master did fall down, yes, then the disciple could not continue to serve and had to make an adjustment. But still he had to be careful. The disciple still had to be grateful for all the good that he did receive from that person. That took also some time to come to that stage for a disciple. There was a lot of emotion to digest. After that, when a spiritual master falls from grace, he cannot be seen in the same light as before. He can never be absolute again. Whatever he says must be weighed and judged on its merit, based on Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. It cannot be taken. And everything that one learned in the past from that spiritual master may also be weighed.
It's like we went through that.
Right. So,
and there were instructions that we got, and there was one instruction that was widely spread by our previous spiritual master, which was that during japa, if you would think about service, he said one time, that's also okay. And that opened up the gates, the floodgates for inattentive chanting. Yeah, because you could be walking around Hare Krishna and think of all the things you had to do during the day. And then, but we thought, no, this is okay. But afterwards I started to think about it. Well, I'm not so sure if that was all right. I think we better go back and try and just fix the mind on the name. Yeah? And not think of our service and postpone that for later. That instruction we cannot take as absolute. So all the old instructions that were ingrained in us by that spiritual master, we had to test them against Prabhupada's instruction, against the scripture, against the Vaishnavas, to make sure that they were all right. So it was a very difficult thing to digest, that whole experience. But anyhow, we can still be appreciative for all the benedictions that we did get and everything that we did learn, and take shelter again of another Vaishnava. And we all along have taken shelter of the Parampara. We never lost our shelter of Prabhupada's feet. That stayed. So even when the spiritual master fell down, we still had the connection with all the previous acharyas. That never stayed. And the one thought I had was that the spiritual master may fall down. The universe may cease to exist. Everything, my whole world may collapse. But one thing will never change. I'm still the eternal servant of Krishna. And that will never change. So, whatever happens, if such misfortune comes our way, we remain fixed. And look for shelter. Because shelter we need. Then we look for shelter elsewhere. That's why. Number two. Serving Prabhupada in separation. It is said when the spiritual master is personally present on the planet, one can serve him both through Vapu and Vani. One can serve him through his physical presence, his body, and through his instruction. In his absence, one can only serve him through his instruction. I was also thinking that when the spiritual master is present, then we can be very much in the mood of, what am I receiving? What mercy am I receiving from my spiritual master? What am I receiving? After this, in the separation of the spiritual master, what begins to count more and more, what am I doing for my spiritual master? Because that's where we connect, in separation. And what am I doing for him? When our spiritual master has left the planet and we do something for him, then immediately the connection is so alive, so strong. Otherwise one might find that over time the connection becomes remote. But when one does something for the spiritual master, then one feels so close, so connected. And one feels the presence of his spiritual master so strong, although he may have left the planet. That's one thought I have on the matter. Okay, these are two huge questions that could also be addressed for many days. So it's like, boy.
You and I both know also during the history of this one, there have been people that have been so completely overwhelmed by guilt that they have fallen to this lust, they have fallen to this passion, to the extent that people have been left themselves to this suicide, to become very, very mentally unstable, instead of actually seeing the condition of a fall down and their own condition and carrying on their devotional service. Could you comment on that?
Okay, so the topic is guilt. Uh, guilt is arises when external circumstances or external standards that are imposed upon us, external standards cannot be followed. These are not the natural standards in our heart. And spiritual life is all about that. We are taking vows. And what is a vow? A vow is basically a promise to act on a standard of behavior above your natural level. That's a vow. And we use the vows to pull ourselves up. We take these vows, and it doesn't come like that from the heart. It's higher than where we are. But okay, we take vows to pull ourselves up. So when we fall from the vows, we become overwhelmed by feelings of guilt. I've promised this, and I tried to commit to this, and now look what happened. I'm such a wretch. A little bit of guilt is healthy. Someone who has no guilt at all is a totally degraded person, actually. So some guilt is required, but dwelling on guilt is not our general sadhana, our general process. Rather, we are realizing, yes, I am very fallen, and I'm not going to have any illusions about myself anymore. I realize now, I am just here simply by the grace and mercy of the Vaishnavas, and by no credit of my own. That I realize. But I also have received an amazing chance. And this is the story of the Bhakti Kalpataru, the wish fulfilling desire tree of devotional service, which is that somehow or other, by the grace of my spiritual master, I have received this wish fulfilling tree of devotional service. Unfortunately, due to my own fallen behavior, I have not properly taken care of this desire tree. I fell down, I misbehaved, I was harsh, I was offensive, I did so many things, and as a result, the tree has become a little bit dried up. But now let me return in the association of the devotees, because they are the caretakers of such desire trees, and in their association this tree will flourish again. And this tree is so powerful that even my fallen condition, even my harsh mind, even my sinful tendencies cannot cover the potency of this tree. And therefore, although I am fallen, I have no qualification, I receive this amazing gift, and it will save me. So let me just take shelter of it. And this is how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that we are, on the one hand, dwelling on how we are fallen, but on the other hand, we're dwelling on the amazing mercy. And if we keep that in mind, then that guilt will not overwhelm us to the point where we say, I may as well jump off the bridge, because I've blown it, and it made such an offense. I have spoiled my chance. I've spoiled my chance by my gross misbehavior. I've spoiled my chance to be successful in spiritual life. False. False. The power of devotional service is so great. It is the gift of our spiritual master. This mercy is so great. Nothing that we can do can spoil that mercy. Nothing. So simply turn back. Yes, with a few scars and so on. With a few dints. But turn back and take it up again.
and we will be successful. Bhakti, those are three intense questions, not number four. Help.
You were talking about the sannyas order of
life. Aye, aye, aye. Okay. Well, I guess Prabhupada made it really clear. If his wife was Krishna conscious. So let's look at that. You know, let's just look at the wives, and every grihastha for himself can look if the wife is Krishna conscious. And what is Krishna conscious? It's very hard, you know, very hard. I thought about this because I took sannyas from the Grihastha ashram after 24 years, which is a long time. And, you know, I found my former wife in the material world, and it was love and all that, you know. And it wasn't a marriage that was arranged by the temple president, if you know what I mean, too. Bhaktin Susie and you know, would make a perfect match and go, like, oh, really? Yes, we think so. It wasn't like that. So, but I thought about it, and I thought, like, what are we really doing here now? We are here in this marriage together, and we have an alliance. We have an alliance. We will support each other through thick and thin. This is our alliance. Oh yes, we fight with each other. Yes, we disagree with each other. But ultimately, bottom line is, we stick together. I back you, you back me. And here we are with this alliance. And this alliance protects us here in the universe. And we hold on to each other. Said, but what are we really protecting? What are we really protecting? Are we protecting each other's false ego? Are we protecting each other's material desires? What are we protecting here? I said to myself, I said, the risk that we are here in our little protected alliance, you know, maybe, you know, maybe my dear husband, maybe the world doesn't understand you, maybe the world doesn't love you, but one thing you must know, I do. God, somebody loves me in the world. I can face them all of them, you know. You can hate my guts. I couldn't give a fig, you know, because she loves me. Yes, she does. Right, Bhakta, I was telling myself, you know, maybe it can be done. Maybe. Maybe it would be, it's possible, if we both would become pure devotees, that we could stay together and go back to Godhead. Maybe. But then I had doubt, Bhakta. Then I was thinking to myself, but what if you're not pure devotees? And I know about myself. I was thinking that I'm not that pure. And I know my wife. And I know that she's not that pure other after 24 years. I was thinking, she's wonderful. Because she, my former wife, had one good quality that was outstanding. She had a noble heart. She still has. Has a noble heart. So I had to appreciate that, and I did. But I was thinking, what if we, in the name of pure devotional service, just feeding and protecting each other's false egos, then I'm going to take another birth? No thanks, I said to myself. I don't sign for that. And I went, and I decided, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take some yards. I'm not going to take the risk. I'm going to be on the safe side. It may be a little painful for both, but still I'm going to be on the safe side. I'm going to take sannyas because I want to go back to Godhead. And it's not a divorce, because one is still together, but at a distance. Because when it's proper, the wife continues to follow the husband. So it's not speak to my lawyer, you know, hate your face, trying to blank out the memory of you from my life forever. No. But it becomes almost like a guru-disciple relationship. So the wife still follows, but then in the mood, more, almost in a disciple. So nothing lost, everything's going on, just a little distance. Yeah. That's okay. Better safe than sorry, you know, because at the end of life, we want this to be the last one. And while we're at it, we may as well do something to deliver the world. And it says, Vasudeva Kutumbakam, the whole world becomes one's family. And it is just amazing. It is amazing how many people one can inspire instead of that one person, the wife. It's just amazing how much energy can go into one wife, and when one withdraws that energy, to how many people that same energy can reach out. It never fails to amaze me. That's a realization of the Sannyas Ashram. Anyway, it's breakfast time, Bhakta. You've had your questions. Four was enough. He looks like he's got another one. But there's only so much we can digest, you know. I think we leave it at this. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Thanks for the questions, Bhakta. Shilpa Offer, Ki Jai.